Welcome to the podcast of Focus 580, featuring interviews with newsmakers and experts on international affairs and daily life, hosted by David Inge at WILL Radio, Urbana, Illinois. Please support this service by becoming a member and visit us on the web at will.uiuc.edu.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you here. And we're also pleased to have on the program with us Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is on the program once a month, has been for a long time, to talk about home maintenance. And if you have heard the program before, you know that we're interested in whatever questions that you might have about just about anything that goes into the single-family home. Can have to do with heating and cooling, with insulation, with roofing, with siding, with windows, with doors, with attics, with basements. I'll stop there. You get the idea. If there's a problem, you think something needs to be fixed, you're thinking about making some changes, doing some remodeling, any and all of that, and you're just not quite sure to go about it, or you're interested in advice on materials or whatever, give us a call, and I know Hank will do his best to help you out. Here in Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Well, we're starting to get some calls in here, and I think pretty soon the lines are going to be full. So maybe before we start, let me ask you a question. We were just chatting here about the fact that on the last show, someone called in and had some questions about venting of plumbing systems.
Yes.
And venting of plumbing systems. And you were talking about something called a Studer valve. And maybe we should just go back and you can review that, and then we can tell people why they can't have one.
Okay. Basically, this is a one-way air admittance valve, which you put on the venting side of the drain system. They are used fairly widely. However, I find that, unfortunately, the state of Illinois plumbing code prohibits them.
Okay.
So we have to go back to the direct vent. I do a lot of work in Colorado, and we use them extensively there. I don't know the entire basis for the prohibition in Illinois. It's been around for a long time, apparently. Hmm. So afraid we can't use them here.
Okay. So then this is something that is used as an alternative to the vent pipe that goes up through
the
roof.
Right.
Okay.
Right. You still have to have one vent pipe that goes through the roof, but when you're adding appliances, it's a lot easier to put one of these things on than to try and plumb in the vent system. And it's extensively used elsewhere for that purpose.
Okay. But in any case, the building code for the entire state of Illinois,
the state of Illinois
says
plumbing codes,
says you can't use that. All right. What do you know about, just offhand, do you know about Indiana?
No, I don't. I've never been asked there. As I say, I work in a number of states, but very little in Indiana.
Very little in Indiana. Okay. Well, somebody, I guess, they can try and check that out. Otherwise, we have several callers here ready to go, and we'll start right out with someone in Urbana. And this is line one. Hello.
Hello. My neighbor is having vinyl siding put on his house, and they ripped off the old siding before they put the new siding on. And I just wondered if you'd talk about vinyl siding and why they did it that way.
Well, basically, vinyl siding is a relatively low-maintenance material. It never needs to be painted. As a matter of fact, it really shouldn't be painted. However, when you are taking the old siding off, you should remember that vinyl siding is not waterproof. Wind will blow water through the joints and so on. As a matter of fact, there are even weep holes made by the manufacturer to drain any moisture out from behind it.
Oh.
So this means there is supposed to be a weather barrier behind it.
Yeah, they did put that on.
Okay. The weather barrier can be a number of things. It can be things like Tyvek or Typar.
That's what it was, Typar.
And that needs to be sealed around the windows and doors. So that we keep all the moisture away from the sheathing that's behind it. We have had problems in this area with a number of builders who, on new construction, have hung vinyl siding without this weather barrier. And it's usually about 7 years until the sheathing starts rotting out.
Uh-oh.
So, but there's nothing really wrong with vinyl siding. It has to be hung carefully in that vinyl moves more with changes in temperature than any other building material that we use, which means it is not nailed tightly to this house, but is rather nailed in slotted holes, snug enough to keep it from vibrating in the wind, but flexible enough so that it will move, because the piece of vinyl siding will gain length in summertime and shrink in the wintertime.
Well, they did put short pieces on.
Okay.
They were like maybe 6 foot pieces.
Yeah. Well, that will minimize it as long as they do the joints properly and don't nail it too tight. If you nail it too tight, then the stuff buckles in the summertime because it can't move to accommodate the change in length with temperature.
Mm-hmm.
But it's perfectly good. I know of a number of vinyl siding jobs here in Champaign-Urbana that have been up for 30 years and still looking very good.
Yeah. Is it better or worse than it was shingles before?
Yeah.
Shingle siding. Is it better or worse than shingles? Because shingles, well, you have to paint.
Yeah. It's put on for low-maintenance purposes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As I said, it doesn't need painting. As a matter of fact, it surely shouldn't be painted. Pick a color because you're going to be stuck with it.
Yeah. So it's not a bad thing.
No, absolutely not.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Well, now then I'll ask what about metal siding? We've talked about this before. Each kind has some advantages and some disadvantages.
The metal siding, probably the next most popular one, is aluminum. It doesn't move as much as vinyl. However, it is subject to denting from a hailstorm or something like that. Steel siding is far more resistant to denting. It doesn't move as much as either vinyl or aluminum. However, you have a finite life on both steel and aluminum, that the factory applied coat of paint is essentially good for about 20 years, at which point you are going to have to repaint.
Okay.
So, and if you scratch steel siding, you will rust.
All right. For vinyl, one of the things about vinyl you have to keep in mind is that whatever the color you get, that's the color you got.
That's the one you should have, because painting, there are some companies that claim they can paint vinyl siding. I would never recommend it.
And it will crack if you hit it hard.
It will crack if you hit it, particularly in very cold weather. It gets more brittle as the temperature drops, and it will crack. And if your lawnmower picks up a pebble and whacks it in there, you may need a hole through it.
So if you were, if your concern was the skill of the people who were putting it up, sounds as if the vinyl siding is more difficult to install properly than metal siding is.
Yes, it is. And there are several fastening systems that help this, but not used very often because they cost more than nails.
Right. Otherwise, would you, as far as you're concerned, is it kind of a toss-up, which you would get if you were going to put siding on your house? Well, if you were going to put siding on your house, which would you pick?
Probably fiber cement.
Okay.
Different product.
Different product entirely. Okay.
Entirely. But in terms of minimum maintenance and durability under almost everything except being hit by a truck, I would probably go with the fiber cement.
Oh, with fiber cement. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, other questions are welcome here. We'll go on. Next, we have someone in Oakwood, line two. Hello.
Ian. Okay, yeah. In a house that's using ground loop geothermal, so that's a heat pump.
Yes.
How would it be possible to have both radiant heating and central air?
Well, you can go to a system whereby in the heating cycle it is heating liquid, which you are circulating through the system.
Right.
And but central air, you have to have a separate duct system and air handler. It's kind of complicated, but it can be done.
It can be, okay.
Yeah.
So there are units, the heat pump unit itself can be purchased that has both capabilities?
I don't know whether it's a combined unit or whether it takes two separate units, but it can be done. Because all we're doing is changing heat or moving heat. We're not creating heat.
Right.
And so we can move heat from the ground into hot water. or we can move it in. We can reject heat from air and put it back in the ground. So either one of which can be done, but it's relatively expensive to do the double system. It is quite expensive to do.
I see. Might it be, well, no, it wouldn't be as cost efficient in terms of running to use a central air that's mounted up in the upper part of the house.
Well, you could put the coil any place, so it
yeah, I'm thinking that, you know, a regular air exchange.
No, that is not as efficient as the ground loop system.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Next is Lafayette, line number 3. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. How do you explain sweat or condensation on the inside of the storm window?
Oh, okay. That basically means that the inside window leaks more air than the storm window does.
So it's warm in there.
And the moisture will migrate there, and you'll get some condensation there. Generally speaking, what we do is drill a couple of eighth-inch holes in the frame of the outside storm window to allow the moisture to escape. So that storm windows do not have to be airtight. The basic purpose of a storm window is to have zero air velocity, or essentially zero air velocity, between the panes.
It's a windbreak.
It's a windbreak. That's it. Strictly, the insulation is the still air.
Okay.
It is not the window itself.
Main question appropriate for this weather. I'm contemplating a snowblower to save my back, but a essential question seems to be, does a snowblower or thrower work at all well with the heavier, denser, stickier snows that are the most dangerous and difficult to shovel?
Yes, I've used snowblowers in all varieties of conditions. They work quite well. So you may have to feed it a little slower with a heavy one, but I have a sidewalk-type snowblower, and when I was in the Air Force, I had 400-horse diesels to clear runways.
Ever heard of a electric snowblower?
Yes, it's just they don't have as much power, therefore you have to feed them a lot slower.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. I guess that might, if you thought you were maybe only going to use it once or twice a year, that might, because small gasoline engines, they don't like to just sit around.
That's very true, yeah. You've got a lot less maintenance, but and they're lighter weight, easier to handle. But if we've got a foot of snow, I'll take my gasoline.
Yeah, right. Okay.
That doesn't happen to us very often.
Not around here. Not around here. Maybe tonight, tomorrow, you never can tell. Champagne is next, line 1. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, how often should you get your septic system pumped out?
Do you have a garbage disposer?
Yes.
I would say about every maximum 5 years, 3 to 5 years.
What if you don't do it? Back up, or what happens?
Basically, you go into the first tank. If the material does not digest, and the reason I asked was whether you had a garbage disposer, because you get more mineral things that do not digest. That builds up in the tank and eventually will build up so that it goes out into the disposal field. And it can plug the disposal field, and then you're looking at about $3,000 to put in a new one.
Where does the mineral matter come from? Because we just put vegetable scraps down there and stuff.
Well, there's still a certain amount of it in human waste and in the vegetables. You still will get a buildup of indigestible material.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Okay. Next, I think, is line number 4, and that would be El Paso.
Good
right
morning.
Here. Hi.
Enjoy the program.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Our home is heated with an oil furnace, and I'm considering the purchase of a corn-burning stove for supplemental heat. But is there any way that those two could share the same chimney?
No. The code says that you can only have one fuel in a chimney.
Okay.
I'm not sure that this has any great basis, but that is what the code says, and I would hesitate to violate that. The deposits in the chimney are different, and the oil burner has a stickier deposit. Now you can burn wood and pellets and this kind of thing, but I think I would not go with either gas or oil into the same flue. Now, it can be the same chimney structure as long as you have separate flues in it.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
All right, and back here to Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I would like to ask you about the heat on demand water systems.
Yes.
I've read a little bit about them, not very much. I see there are several different types. I think there's some that are electric and some that are propane.
You can get electric, propane, or natural gas.
Okay, and one person mentioned that they're a little bit slow to give hot water for small tasks like hand washing. However, when we lived in Scotland, I think that's the kind of system we had, and it was very good. So I'd like your comments.
Okay, generally speaking, they work well if you don't have too high a flow and with the temperature of the water in the pipes in the ground that we get here, they seem to work quite well.
Okay.
I don't see any reason. You can get them in various sizes so that they will work with different flow rates.
Right.
But I see no reason why. If you're slow on using small, somebody's just got the control set to require too much flow to kick them in.
I see.
So it's a matter of flow. Now, we do run into places, as you've heard when I'm on the air, I do a lot of work in Colorado, and there the water coming out of the ground is too cold.
Oh.
you have to have about a double size of the normal one in order to warm it up enough to have a comfortable shower.
Right, but we're here just in town with the, you know, city pipes.
Right.
So
I don't think there should be any problem with it at all. Now, generally speaking, they will be more expensive to install than the conventional water heater.
Uh-huh.
However, they should, depending on how you use water, when, and so on, it probably will operate for less. I would stick with one of the name brands. We had a bunch of these things imported from Japan back in the 70s, and we had a matter of how do you get parts for them and this sort of thing. But we have a number of standard brands now that are readily available.
Great. Well, that's very helpful. Thanks so much for your time.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. The guest this morning here in this first hour, Focus 580, Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is on the program once a month, always on Monday, to talk about home maintenance. And if you have questions, you can call us 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. And toll-free 800-222-9455. And next is someone in Champaign, line number three. Hello.
Good morning. I live in an old balloon construction house.
Yes.
There's no insulation in the walls. Talked to a contractor about 2 years ago who basically said, oh, it's so hard to do, don't do it. What's your feeling on this?
He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Okay. So he'd have to put holes all over the house to be able to do any insulating.
Well, you're going to have to make some holes, yes. And they can be done, generally speaking. What kind of siding do you have?
Wood.
Okay. Basically, I would be tempted to go with a contractor who would carefully remove a strip of wood around the outside of the house, drill behind it, blow it in, and then put the piece of wood back again.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it by drilling and then plugging, and your house looks like it has been shot at and missed.
I can.
Now, with balloon framing, it will probably be necessary to go in at the level where the second floor framing comes in, drill there, and run some foam into that and let it set up to keep the insulation blowing back into the spaces between the ceiling of the first floor and the floor of the second. That way we can blow the insulation in tight enough so that it won't settle. If you don't do that, block up those spaces, it's difficult to get the insulation in dense enough because it will tend to blow back between the floors.
Okay. Okay. And what he had said was, oh, there are all sorts of fire stops built in here, and we'd have to, you know, find where they are and punch in between each of them. And you're saying probably not?
There probably are some fire stops. But considering the possibilities and how much it costs to heat that thing, I would think that that would be a minor consideration.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
All right. Thank you. To line next, line number four, someone listening this morning in Indiana. Hello.
Hello. I need to know if there's any big difference between the various things you can use for plugging up a hole. Like I have a framed window. It's aluminum. Goes up and down. Snaps in place for the winter. And I thought I had a front door problem, and I thought I fixed that. And as I sit back to admire my work, the wind was still blowing, so to speak. And it was the windows, definitely, for sure. And I'm accustomed to using the strip stuff, and I've used that, what they call rope caulk.
Mm-hmm.
And in one time I used the foam thing that I misjudged it completely, and I had things sticking out of a brick side of a building, which I had to plane down and do a lot of notching and make it look normal for a while. But I was wondering, about, among those three, which would you suggest to get in behind the actual framing for the windows themselves and the part where the windows touch that part?
Well, usually what you have to do a good job is to take off the interior trim.
Okay.
So that you can get to the space between the window jamb and the rough opening.
Okay.
And then you can use a low expansion foam to fill that or something like that. Do you have the old fashioned windows with ropes and weights?
No, these are modern ones.
Okay.
They're metal, you know, have that L-shaped panel and stuff.
Usually when you get leakage around a window, it is leakage through that space between the window frame and the rough opening.
Okay.
And that's what you need to be able to get to seal.
Yeah.
Now, as far as the windows themselves, most of the mechanical weather strips work fairly well there. But usually the real problem is the fit of the window sash and the rough opening.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. All right, very good. To line number one. This is someone on a cell phone. Hello.
Yeah, Hank. On corn burners again, what are some of the downsides of it? And also, what's the best way to ventilate them and stuff? Can you go through the side of the house? I have no chimneys. How do you handle that?
Well, it would have to be designed to vent through the side of the house. Otherwise, you may have to install a flue of some variety. What is the downside? Well, right now, if you try to go out and try and buy one, you probably have an 8-month list waiting in order to get one.
I understand that.
And the other thing is, do you have a good, reliable source of the fuel? Generally speaking, corn burners are usually...
Yeah, I'm a farmer. I have it.
Yeah, but oftentimes you'll find that from the seed companies, they have treated seed that can't be fed but didn't sell, so they sell it off for this sort of thing. You can use a lot of your cracks and splits and this sort of thing.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we certainly now have open lines and time for other callers. We're about midway through here with Hank Spies from Spies Home Inspection Service. And if you have questions about home maintenance, you have some kind of problem, something needs to be fixed, and you're just not quite sure how to go about it, you can give us a call, and Hank will see if he can help you out. 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line that is good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. And we're starting to get some more calls here. We'll go to the next, and that is someone in Urbana, and line one. Hello.
Good morning, Hank. How are you doing today?
Oh, pretty good.
Hey, I've got a... a poured basement. I need to put an egress window into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know where to begin finding somebody who could do that. Do you have any idea where a fella could look and find somebody qualified to cut into an existing foundation?
Well, there are a number of firms that do that sort of thing. I don't have my directory in front of me at the moment, but if you give me a call at my office a little later today, I can probably come up with somebody for you.
Hank, I'll be glad to do that.
Okay.
And you're over at the building council?
No, I'm right now the I'm retired from the university, so I work off my own home phone, 356-5048.
All righty, I'll give you a shout.
Great. Thanks. Okay, thank you. Next up, another Urbana person here, line number two. Hello.
Yes, hi. Mm-hmm. I have some cedar siding. It's about 20 years old, and I hope I didn't miss this in your show. I just turned on, but it's needing maintenance. And I was wondering if you can give me some tips in terms of scraping and what to use to reapply what kind of stain.
Okay, it is stained rather than painted.
One side of the house is painted.
Okay, what is the problem? Is that peeling or?
It's peeling, uh-huh.
Well,
and in terms of, to be more specific, I started to scrape it off, and I found it very easy to dig into the cedar, and I was looking for another way to get that paint off.
Well, the trouble is nearly cedar soft enough that nearly anything you use could dig in. For instance, you can use a high-pressure water blast, but you've got to be real careful of that because you can erode the cedar with water as well.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing is when you get the thing back down to bare wood, be sure that within a couple of hours of the time that you're going to put a prime coat on it, that you touch sand it because the sunlight causes the cells on the surface of the wood to deteriorate. And if you scrape it today and don't get around to painting it until day after tomorrow, the surface is very badly deteriorated by the ultraviolet, and the paint will stick to the deteriorated stuff, but it doesn't hang on the wall very well. When I'm doing something like that, I usually have a little electric palm sander, and I just zip that over it and then put the paint on so that I'm going on to fresh wood. And then the paint sticks.
Okay. And do you have any recommendation in terms of stain?
No, not particularly. Stains, generally speaking, are better than paint on cedar just because they don't form a film that will peel.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Let's go next to someone in Aurora, line number three. Hello. Oh, pardon me. No, I guess that would be Urbana, line number three. Hello.
Yes. Hello.
Yeah.
I want to ask about programmable thermostats for a hot water radiant system rather than a hot air heating system.
Well, not really much different.
I heard some years ago that the programmable ones don't work very well with the hot water radiant system. Is that true?
Not particularly. The difference is that the hot water system is a slower to react. Therefore, it may take longer for it to warm up in the morning, and you won't get quite as rapid a cool down, so you get quite as much benefit from at night. But I see no reason at all why there should be a problem with programmables. They say you may just have to set them a little differently.
Just expect a bigger lag time.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
and definitely a hot water system has more lag time.
But it'll work with that kind of thermostat. It
yes.
Should work with it okay.
Don't see any problem.
All right, thanks.
Okay. To Tuscola. This is the next caller here, line four. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I wanted to call and talk to you about a furnace. Mm-hmm. My brother just bought an old house, and it has a furnace in it that was a coal-burning furnace. They switched it to oil, and now it's a natural gas, so it's a great big round thing with great big asbestos runs in the basement. And his heat bills are like $500, $600 every month. That's the heat and gas,
right?
Or the, you know, the lights and gas combined. And so he was talking about getting a new furnace. And they have natural gas in the town that he lives in. But I didn't know what kind of furnace would be the best kind of furnace for him to get. And he was talking about buying the furnace and having somebody install the furnace, and then he would install the runs. But my son said that if you install the runs yourself, you could get carbon monoxide poisoning. And he's never installed the runs, but since there's openings, you know, in the house already, we can go and get the stuff we need to install. That would cut down on the price. And I was just wondering, you know, what your take was on this.
Well, you're only going to get carbon monoxide if you have a problem with the flue, not with the heat runs.
Oh, good.
So the main thing that he's going to run into with this is the disposal of the asbestos on the existing runs when he takes them out. There are certain things you got to do, and you have to send it to in barrels to an approved landfill and so on to get rid of the asbestos.
Oh.
So that's where the problem comes in. You'll find that you get an awful lot more space in the basement because we're using 6 and 8 inch ducts instead of 15s and something of this sort.
Yeah, his are huge. They're
Well, it was originally a gravity system. Now, the only thing you can afford to do with anybody that has a furnace of that kind, the only thing you can afford to do is throw it away, whether it works or not. There are essentially two types of new furnaces. You can get a direct vent furnace, which has an efficiency of between 90 and 95%, or you can get an induced draft furnace, which has an efficiency of about 80 to 85%. Obviously, the more efficient one is slightly more expensive. It will probably pay for itself in the long run. And then it will vent through a plastic pipe through the side of the foundation so you don't hook to the chimney at all. And while I guess it is theoretically possible to run into a carbon monoxide problem with one of these, I never have, because everything works on fans and pressure, and all the pressure is going out, not allowing anything back into the house. So I wouldn't worry about the carbon monoxide problem with that. But as I say, his biggest problem is going to be disposing of the asbestos that's on the ductwork he's got now.
Is one type of natural gas furnace better than another, or are they all just about the same? Or how do we know when we go get estimates?
Okay, you will be told that the furnace has an AFUE efficiency of certain percent. At the moment, manufacturers are not permitted to produce a furnace of less than 78% efficiency. Oh. And as I say, the direct vents are usually running 90 to 95%.
Okay, and that's what we should look for then.
That certainly would be what I would be looking for. Now, I don't know how well the house is insulated.
I don't either. It's an old house.
Okay. Before you put in a new furnace, the insulation should be brought up to standard so that the furnace can be sized properly for the heat loss of the house.
Okay.
That's certainly something to be checked on in the process.
All right. Okay, I appreciate your help.
Okay, well, thanks for the call.
Thanks. Bye.
I'm assuming there just the thing is that if the house is well insulated, then you could go with a smaller furnace as opposed to a bigger one, which is going to cost you less to have it installed, and should it also cost less to operate.
Right, right. And again, there is a few hundred dollars difference between the 78% and the 90-plus percent. If you have a very well-insulated house, it may be difficult to justify the 90%. If it's not insulated well at all, then you better go with the high-efficiency one.
Yeah. All right. Up next, we have another caller, and this would be someone in Champaign, I think, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
First of all, thanks for running this practical type of program on WILL.
Sure.
Here's the question. I'm tired of the ceramic tile in my bathroom. It's 1-inch squares.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering about the possibility of running like petroleum jelly over the grout and then painting the squares with an enamel epoxy paint. Have you ever had any experience or knowledge of that?
I can't say that I've ever done that particular thing. When I got tired with the 1-inch square ceramics in my house, I pulled it all off and replaced it with artificial marble cast panels. Mm-hmm. It has no joints to maintain or anything of that sort. I strongly suspect that it would be very difficult to control the application of the petroleum jelly so that you got an even surface to paint.
I was thinking maybe instead of just a solid color, a mottled effect.
Yeah. Well, as I say, a ceramic tile to me is a high-maintenance material, not necessarily because of the tile, but because of all the joints and grout and this sort of thing. And this is why I like to go with the one-piece plastic panels or the, and as I say, in my case, we did a cast artificial marble and put that up, and it has worked wonderfully well.
Okay. Thank you, Hank.
Thanks for the call. Let's go on here. Fairbury is next caller. It's line number two. Hello.
Yeah, hello, Hank.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hank, I enjoy your show here. My problem with my house is I have a well-insulated house that has the direct vent furnace. Mm-hmm. I have all thermal pane windows in. And this time of year, when the furnace is running, we have a problem with moisture on our windows on the inside.
Well, you must have a moisture source someplace. Because yeah. With thermal pane, you really shouldn't get condensation. This means that the humidity is too high. And
yeah,
it's a
right.
matter of trying to figure out where the excess moisture is coming from. Is your house on a basement or a crawl space?
Basement.
Okay. Basement dry?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a shower in the basement and one in the on the main floor, and we have a vent in there that we do run when we're using the shower. And we have a laundry in the basement, but we don't have any ventilating out in the basement, so to speak.
Okay, your dryer is vented out, I assume.
The dryer is vented out, yeah.
I would say that any time you get condensation appearing, you turn on one of the bathroom fans. Let it run all day if necessary.
Okay.
And that should help get rid of the moisture, because your problem, whatever its source, you have a moisture source someplace that is running the humidity in the house too high.
Yeah.
And but the only way you can conveniently get rid of it, you can also run a dehumidifier.
Okay.
If you don't.
The vent for the furnace pulls the air in from the outside.
Right.
Is there another ventilator that you can put? I've heard somebody talk about it, and I'm really not real familiar with it, that you can draw more air in from the outside?
Yes. Essentially, if you run the bathroom fan, that's what you're doing. You're pulling it in from various and sundry places rather than through a specific duct. But, yes, certainly you can do that.
Okay. All right, well, I'll try running the vent when we do have the moisture then and see if that helps.
Yeah, generally speaking, does your unit have a power humidifier on it?
No, it doesn't.
Okay, good. Because generally speaking, we work on the basis that the humidity is too high if you get condensation on a window with double glass.
Yeah.
The humidity is too low if every time you touch the doorknob or the light switch, it bites back. And we try and work between the two.
Well, what percent of humidity should you have inside your house now in the wintertime?
Like I said, somewhere between.
40%? Or because ours is about 70%, and I know that's too high.
That is too high. It varies with outside temperature.
Okay.
So this is one of those things. That's why we use the empirical thing of, do you have condensation on the window or do you get zapped every time you walk across
right
floor?
Right in between there, okay.
And you keep
all
between
right.
them. Because any humidistat that's been in place for more than 6 months is probably out of calibration because of the accumulation of dust in the sensing element.
Okay, all right. Okay, I'll give it a try then.
All right, well, thank you for the call. We have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580, and certainly time for other callers. 333-9455, that's the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line that's good to anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. We're not going to have people outside, at least for the next couple of days, doing a lot of outside work, not if we get a big snowfall. And it's still sort of coolish, but I'm wondering, we did have at least one question about outside painting. Tell us again what temperature you want to be looking for if you're going to paint
above
outside,
50.
Above 50. So you don't want the temperature to go below 50 ever at any time.
Not in the first 24 hours at least.
Okay. And the concern here is that you're not going to get good adherence of the paint.
It is going to set the way it should.
Right. Okay. So other than that, as long as when we get to that point where the low temperatures don't go below 50.
Right.
That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Go from there.
All right. Next up, we have a caller here on line number one, and we'll go right there. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question about electrical situation. I remember reading, a week or two ago in the local paper about rewiring an electric plug. And I was surprised to learn that it's against the code to wrap the wire around the terminal and say number 14 gauge flexible standard electric wire. Any comments about that?
The main thing that we don't want to do is have more than two wires under one screw.
Oh.
Because the two will not be held equally tight.
I see.
But certainly we have millions of electrical connections with a wire wrapped around a screw. I'm not quite sure where that discussion came from.
Yeah. Well, so you have three screws under this plug, and you'd have one wire for each one. That should satisfy the code, shouldn't it?
Yes, it certainly should.
And I'm sure that the intent is to keep the little stray wires from touching each other.
Well, this can be a problem with stranded wire. Most wires are not. In Champaign-Urbana, for instance, we're not allowed to use number 14 wire. It must be at least number 12.
Okay.
And that's
number 12. I'll keep that in mind.
And that's primarily because, not that there's anything dangerous about number 14, it's the fact that most people tend to put 20-amp fuses in it, and 14 won't carry 20 amps.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks a lot, Hank.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for the call. We'll go on here. Caller line number 4 is next, a toll-free line. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I have a question about geothermal system. I have a furnace that's about 13 years old, and we have like 12 acres, so there's plenty of room to put it in. And I'm wondering if it's cost-effective, because I've got some pretty high cost estimates.
I really question whether it is cost-effective, considering that your furnace is relatively new. Generally speaking, a geothermal system is significantly more expensive. And are you running on propane or natural gas?
Propane.
Well, if the price of propane keeps going up, it may well pay to do it. But at the moment, I would think that we could probably be very hard-pressed to justify the cost of the geothermal system.
Yeah, cause it looks like it saved a lot of money in the summer, maybe not as much, with the air conditioning.
Well, actually, the difference is probably more noted in the winter.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
But, so as I say, I like geothermal systems, but, boy, they sure are expensive these days.
Yeah, they are. Okay, well, I thank you.
All right, thank you. And again, we certainly have time for other calls, maybe about 5, 6, 7 minutes if you want to give us a call. Talk with Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service, 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have that toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call, use that number and calls on us. That's 800-222-9455. We're talking about the fact that if people are thinking about having a new furnace, now the two major choices would be between that vents essentially like they always have, by gravity, up some kind of a pipe that probably goes up an old chimney, chances are, and the kind that now will vent, and it works because it's got a little fan in there that will take the flue gases.
Actually, both of them have fans now.
Even the ones that go up?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So it's not just a gravity thing.
The induced draft one, which is the 78% to 80%, has a fan, and then the high deficiency also has a fan.
Okay. Well, that was, I guess my question was, if you're thinking about the reliability, the possibility that something might go wrong and have to be fixed, and so you were looking for something that's got the least amount of moving parts, I was thinking, well, that might argue for the older, the kind that vents up an existing chimney, for example, but maybe there's not that much difference between the two.
No, there really isn't, and the higher efficiency has to do with the design and construction of the furnace more than anything else. So I would still I can't see the gas prices.
They're not
going to
go significantly. They're not going to go down. Probably not.
And so therefore, I would look very heavily at the 90%+.
Yeah. Any idea about how long something like that, how long it takes to get paid back for putting in a new furnace like that?
You'd have to know more about the insulation level in the house and things like this as to what. But generally speaking, I suppose it's 3 or 4
years. Yeah, okay. Well, let's get in some more calls here. Line number 1 is in Champaign. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you think it's a good idea to take up the water company on their offer of insurance for the pipes that go from your house to the main line?
I wouldn't.
Okay. That's all I want to know. Thank you.
All right. That's the call. That's people. I'm probably now have gotten mailings from the water company. I know I have gotten some.
Yes.
That say this. You know, if there's a problem, it could cost you a lot of money. But we will essentially we're selling you some insurance. So if the
and you have to realize that insurance is a wager, and people seldom make wagers unless they can make money on them.
Yeah. Okay.
In other words, my house is 50 years old. The pipes coming in are still just fine.
All right. Okay. Well, people can take that into consideration. Let's go to line number 2. This is, I believe, also Champaign. Hello.
Hi, gang. Hope everyone's good today on this chilly day. So what I want to ask Hank is, how does one prioritize the jobs for the house? Like, we're starting to get a little bit of money. We live out in Lake Park, and the house is 1970s or something. And we don't know whether to put the money into more insulation in the attic, new windows, insulation in the, what do you call it, the crawl space, new doors. Like, how does one rationally sort of lay out a plan and get the most bang for the buck step by step?
Well, a lot depends on what's there now.
Right.
In other words, if you have R13 insulation in the attic, high priority would be to bring it up to 40.
Oh, okay. Okay.
If you have no insulation in the band joist or crawl space foundation, that would certainly be next on my list.
Okay.
As far as windows are concerned, it depends on how bad they are. Generally speaking, if you have double glazing of one kind or another, and you don't have excessive air leakage around the window, you know, use a cigarette or a candle to find out when the wind is blowing.
Okay.
And that would be their replacement windows are usually far down my list.
Oh, okay.
Generally speaking, if you had a halfway decent window to start with, some rehabbing and reworking on it will probably get you as much improvement as a new window would have, and it would certainly cost a lot less.
Okay. Well, that's all good information. The one last one is sort of the same thing, idea of prioritizing. How do you know we have a, what do you call it, a ridge vent on the
yes.
attic? Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do you know whether it might be better for when the heating starts or the heat starts in the summer to actually put in a proper attic vent, a fan of some sort?
Well, again, this is sort of depends upon the insulation in the ceiling. If you've got the R40, forget it.
Oh, okay.
Now, if you had R13 down there, I would spend my money on the insulation rather than on the exhaust fan.
Okay. Well, that helps, actually. So thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call. I think that I probably have heard other people say sort of the same thing when you talk about list of priorities. And it seems interesting that when people think about making their home more energy efficient, it seems that windows are one of the first things that people think about. And whereas I think, as you suggest, that thinking about insulation, particularly in the attic, should probably be at the top of the list, and windows much, much further down, because, of course, you can
That's where the advertising is aimed. The builders make more money replacing windows than doing
windows.
Anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Not that that's something you should ignore, but as you're thinking about this, that's probably should be down more.
Yeah, we're
the
down
of
the priority list. It depends. If you've got some really terrible windows, maybe, but most of them aren't that bad.
Okay. One more at least. Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Good morning, Hank. I've heard you make comment several times that when you're testing for carbon monoxide, you can tell if someone's been burning a candle. Does this mean that burning candles for decorative reasons is a bad thing?
I believe you should have to have a permit to burn a candle just as you do to own a gun.
Oh, okay. So tell me what they are producing then.
Well, basically, my problem is a number of fires that are started by candles.
Oh, okay. So it's
now. Certainly, I would minimize candles. I mean, I know there are people that have a half a dozen candles going all the time, and I can tell it by looking at the grease film it leaves on the walls. So, you know, the byproducts of burning wax are not particularly desirable.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks. Well, just to underscore what you said, an unattended candle. There are many fires that are started by unattended
candles.
Tremendous
numbers of them, yes.
So that's the thing you just got to be really careful of. If you're going to have a candle going, be in the same room with it. Keep an eye on it. Don't just light it and then go away. Don't light it and go to sleep.
What she mentioned is the fact that when we do house inspection, I do have a carbon monoxide monitor that can tell whether you burn a candle within the last 2 hours in that house. But it is not approaching a danger point. Yeah.
And I was assuming that you would suggest that people have a carbon monoxide detector, like smoke detectors. And where? My question is,
they're usually built into the smoke detector.
Oh, okay. So you can get ones that have both. If you're gonna have a separate unit. I bought one, for example, a couple of years ago and was a little unsure where to put it.
Put it in the bedroom. That's where you spend most of your time, where you would not be aware of a problem occurring.
Okay.
Don't put it in the kitchen.
That was one of the things that it said on the thing, was that don't put it near the stove. Don't put it in the kitchen. All right. Well, I thank you very much for being here.
You're very welcome.
Hank Spies.
Good to be back.
From Spies Home Inspection Services with us here each month on the show to talk about home maintenance.